All right, before we start this podcast and do the intro, Amanda, I have laryngitis, but we're going to do the podcast anyway. Here we go. You ready? Welcome, rock stars from Washington, D.C. This is the Rock.
Wait. Save your voice. Maybe I should do the opening.
No, I you want to do it?
Well, no, I was just going to help you out.
No, I got it. Actually, okay. The more I talk, the better it works.
No, that's not how laryngitis works.
Yeah, I know. Well, I've had it for like a week anyway, so.
Amanda here with ChoiceRealtyConnect.com. Eliminate your stress. Whether you're buying or selling your home, I'll be honored to help you find an expert to work with in your local area. At ChoiceRealtyConnect.com, I will help match you with up to 3 qualified licensed agents that specialize in your specific market. ChoiceRealtyConnect.com serves every zip code in all 50 states with a network of 15,000 top-rated agents that are ranked within the top 5% for sales. Whether you're looking for a condo, new construction, retreat, vacation properties, or you're a first-time home buyer or even a seasoned buyer, let me help connect you with the perfect top agent today. ChoiceRealtyConnect.com. The choice is yours.
Rockland, USA.
Hey, all you rock stars from Washington, D.C. This is the Rock on the Money podcast, episode 73. Time to talk about saving, investing, and protecting all of those hard-earned monies. We're here to coach you along your path to retirement and financial independence. I'm Craig, your Dave Ramsey Master Financial Coach, along with Amanda, a corporate in-house lawyer and real estate agent. And we are so grateful you've joined us. Call us right now with your questions, comments, 989-888-ROCK. Check us out on Facebook at Rock on the Money or the website at rockonthemoney.com. It's so good to have you back, Amanda.
Yeah. Hey, Craig. How's it going?
Good. Well, other than I can't talk and we're doing a podcast, which, but we'll get through it. We'll get through
it. Right. Yeah.
As long as I don't get excited, I keep my voice low, we'll be fine. So.
You might have to tone down the rants.
Yeah, I know. Well, I won't be ranting. It's my side gig, which is ruining my voice. So I need to calm down with that and then I can talk for the podcast. So it's actually better today than it has been. So we're slowly coming back. Anyway, how have you been? You're back.
I'm back. That's feeling good. Okay. Still recovering, but
that's good.
Slow and steady. I'm very impatient by nature. So this is like torture.
I think we both are.
Yeah. Because I mentally feel great and it's just annoying to have to wait for physical healing.
I know. Look, I got laryngitis and so we're both in the same boat. And yet I still do this other show 7 days a week for 6 hours.
So, yes, you're obviously you are prolonging your recovery process.
Oh, well. I'm a hustler. And look, you're the same way. So we're both so stubborn. We are.
Right. But, well, so I have some unfortunate news.
Uh-oh.
It's official. The Ireland trip is off again.
Why? What happened?
Yeah. Well, I got an email from the travel company. First, I was watching the government page in Ireland, and they still are requiring 14-day quarantines for anyone arriving. Man. So, that's, I mean, why fly around the globe in one hotel room for 14 days?
But yeah, forget that. Yeah.
So it's off. Maybe 2021 will be a better year. So definitely no real travel plans for the next few months.
Yeah, I think next year will be a lot better. And we had some good news recently last week about this new test. Costs $5. Yeah, result in 15 minutes. So airline stocks are going back up because they're looking at.
Now, what I did hear from a medical expert, not just on the internet, but a medical expert, is that those rapid tests are very sensitive. So if it comes out negative, it may or may not be negative. But if it comes out positive, then you have a very good certainty that you are positive.
Hey, at least it's something, right?
But there's a lot of false negatives with.
Oh, great. Here I was hoping. Oh, well.
So you have to get tested again in a few days. But yes, it's definitely an improvement over waiting 2 to 3 weeks for results that then at that point are of no help.
Well, because we're both on the mend, we're keeping this podcast to just your questions. We're just going to do questions. So
I do have one short topic.
Please do.
Yeah. So I ran across this article. It's not a new article, but it just hit my feed for some reason. It's from 2019, but I thought it was interesting and something to raise with this group. It's from CNBC, and the advice from this financial guru is that you shouldn't spend more than 10% of your annual income on the purchase of a car. So the total purchase price should not exceed more than 10% of your income for the year.
Wow.
So I think that's a little controversial, don't you, Matt? Don't you?
Well, I'm going to look up real quick what we coach for transportation. Wait, Matt, are you talking about the loan or?
No, just the total purchase price. So, I mean, removing loans from the equation. So if you have an income of, say, $42,000 a year, you should limit your budget for the car purchase to $4,200.
Wait a minute. Didn't we talk about this article before?
I don't know. I don't remember. But then again, my brain's been kind of mushy ever since.
No.
Anesthesia.
We have so many new listeners right now. We're actually getting a flood of new listeners right now. So they may have not heard that. Yeah, I do believe we mentioned something about this, but it is kind of harsh.
Yeah.
It is kind of harsh.
I think that's really harsh. But, you know, Experian found that 20% of borrowers are taking out loans of $50,000 or more. Obviously, that's the other extreme end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make sense either.
Right.
But yeah, people are essentially, even median price cars are essentially, they're spending almost 80% of their gross annual salary.
You said 10%, right?
10% is the recommendation.
Is that for everybody?
Yeah.
So if my car costs $25,000 when I bought it, that means I have to make $250,000
a year? Yes.
Or my net worth?
No.
Your income.
Annual income.
Oh, that's stupid. That's stupid. No, because
you know what we did talk about? Someone had asked not that long ago, I guess there was a recommendation that it should be half of your income. I think it was half. And this person thought they had to buy a car that was $75,000 if they had an income of $150,000. But
yeah.
I think 10% is pretty strict. But here's the thing. This advice, I think, is coming from people who already have a lot of money.
Okay, that would make more sense. And the thing about the 50%, that's the total value of all your vehicles should not be more than half of your annual income. So we do coach that, but that's the max. It doesn't give you an allowance to go do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, I can just go buy a pickup truck. No, that doesn't mean.
It's definitely saying if you want to own a $35,000 luxury vehicle, you should be earning $350,000 a year.
That's great. I think that's shock. That's shock news. Yeah. I think that's just to get, that's a clickbait. That's what I call that.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. No, I don't agree. Sorry.
So yes, I thought I wanted to get your take on it too, because I thought it was pretty outrageous.
Yeah. No, I throw that in the clickbait. I want people not to spend so much money on their vehicles. I'm all about that, but what that says, that makes no sense. So there's got to be more to that, but probably not. I think it's clickbait. So,
well, maybe, but there's a whole article on it, and they've got a chart here showing what type of cars you can get in each price range.
No. I've worked way too hard. I know it's, but I don't have any debt. Mm-hmm. So Dave Ramsey says, you can't buy a new vehicle till you have $1 million net worth. So once you hit $1 million, he even agrees you can buy a new vehicle.
Right.
So I have nothing against used vehicles whatsoever. I think they're great bargains.
So here they have your Honda Civic is maximum new value suggestion. And that's in the price. If your annual income is $150,000 to $200,000 a year.
No, but I don't make that. Well,
right.
Okay, in retirement, with my retirement pension and everything, and the two jobs I worked on top of that, yes, I mean, I'm making good money, but no. You mean all that work?
You have to make a crazy amount of money to afford a Honda Civic.
Yeah, I have to work 7 days a week, two full-time jobs, and be retired with retirement income, and then I can be allowed to buy a Civic? That's stupid.
But, yeah, anyway, you know, I thought it was an outrageous.
However, Amanda, you don't see me running out and buying a Humvee either. So.
No. All right. I guess my key takeaway there is, one, watch where you get your advice from. And two, you got to kind of give it your own gut check test on, does that really make sense?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah. We know how to budget our money. We just don't be stupid people.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So yes, we've got six.
Yeah. Six simple questions. Number one, you ready for this one?
Yes.
This seems to keep popping up. It's gotten to the point where I'm not even reading my messengers at Facebook anymore because I don't want to hear it anymore. But we're going to address it anyway. All right. So how do you feel about the stock market? It's been flying high and I'm worrying it's going to tank soon.
Yeah, I have the same. I mean, everyone's thinking, when's the next shoe going to drop, right?
And I understand that. I mean, when we're recording this, Apple was over $500 a share, which is stupid, in my opinion.
And Tesla's over $2,200 a share.
So,
when a couple months ago,
everybody's at home playing with these stupid stocks. They're messing it all up. But on the long-term range, which I coach, long-term mindset, it doesn't matter. But short-term...
You know what I saw today, Craig? Go ahead. That the U.S. tech stocks are now worth more than the entire European stock market.
Isn't that crazy? And I think that's five stocks, right?
Something like that.
And five stocks that compose of 25% of the entire value.
And the Dow today closed more than 150 points higher to erase all of the 2020 losses.
Isn't that crazy?
Yep.
S&P 500 all-time high. I'm not touching anything. I'm leaving it. I have gotten a point, Amanda. I have not watched CNBC in 3 weeks now.
Yeah. Good.
You were addicted.
We had to do an intervention.
Yes. You do realize what I'm saying there because I'm Mr. CNBC.
Yeah.
I don't even watch my favorite shows. I watch none of it. I don't even pull up the headlines. I did check my stocks today. I'm like, holy crap. I'm actually doing better by not looking at it, which is what we've been saying. So I'm at an all-time high, and if it goes down, whatever. I'm so high, it's stupid. So matter of fact, I'm never going back to work.
I am also at an all-time high.
My stocks in my 457 are up 67%.
Do you want to hear something outrageous? Mine are up 56% in the last 3 months.
Yes. I think, a lot of the movement actually has happened less. But it's, you know, we've been through this before. We've recorded it. And then after we record, it goes right back down. So.
Yeah. Well, I've had a 14% increase just in the last 30 days.
Mm. And if you had Apple.
I'll take 14% a month all day. Every day.
We have too many people at home on the computer watching CNBC buying stocks that should not be where they're at. So the best thing that I'm doing, everyone can do what they want to do. I'm not touching anything.
Yeah, don't touch it. I haven't touched it either.
If it goes down, I have so much fluff in there now, it goes down. But overall, I'm doing great long term. I'm so far up this year, it's stupid. So... I'm anticipating a pullback. But long term, I still say next year is going to be a great bull market. Because a lot of stocks have not come back up. A lot of them are still, they're still negative for the year. So we need to get past COVID. Once that happens, oh my God, the rest of the stocks are coming up. So I'm staying right where I'm at because I'm ready for that to happen. So anyway.
Yeah, I mean, so ultimately, stocks go up, stocks go down. Yep. So no matter what, you're going to be right. If you say stocks are going to go up, you're going to be right at some point. If you say they're going to go down, then you're going to say, oh, I told you so. When they go to have a deep dive one day, they go up and they go down. And then over time, you're ultimately your portfolio as a whole should still go up.
So absolutely, because over time, indexes always go up.
And there's going to be a crash here or there. Look at March and still for the year.
Happens all the time. It's part of the game.
Stay on the roller coaster.
You know, and the problem is so many people are just now looking at their stuff and they have nothing else to do. Yeah. So because they're looking at, they think they know it all now. And it's like, no, this is not normal. This is not a normal stock market. This is going to be studied for years. When we get past this, we're going to be back to a normal crawl again of 10 to 12% a year.
Yeah.
So what do I have? A crystal ball sitting over here? Anyway, question number two, Amanda.
Okay.
19-year-old son lives at home.
Okay.
Is a full-time community college student, works part-time. That's awesome, by the way. Mm-hmm. What would you charge him for room and board? And in parentheses, they said the rent money will be put away from him to use in the future. Now, I'm not sure how they meant that. Is that money for the use in the future for him? Or are they paying
I think that's what it means.
Probably not telling him they're doing that.
Right.
I like that idea. That's nice. So basically forcing him to start investing.
Yes.
Okay. There you go.
I would base it off of what his typical income is right now. So you say he's working part-time. It's hard to identify what would be a fair rate. So I would go with percentage instead. My gut says 50% of his paycheck should be rent.
Wow. Okay. I like that.
One, he's got no other expenses. So that includes room, board, utilities. I think that's more than fair because all of your living expenses are rolled up into that.
Yeah. Yeah, he has no expenses. You're right.
So. Yeah. The only thing the other 50% is going to go to is, you know, eating out, hanging out with friends.
Which you can't do much right now doing that. So.
I would say 50%. And it may not be a lot money-wise because part-time doesn't generally generate a huge amount of income. So I think that's fine. But 50% or more.
There you go.
Would be my suggestion.
Okay. We'll go with that. I like it. Question number three. This is a pretty basic question. I like the basic ones that people can learn from. Question number three, brokerage, 401k, Roth. That's what they have. Here's the question. Which bucket should you use first to last when you are in retirement? Would like to leave my spouse and children or heirs with as least tax consequences as possible.
Okay.
So here, I'm just basically going through the basic generic thing. You can pile on top of it. But we always want to use traditional money first. So we're referring to the 401k. So your 401k is either a Roth or a traditional. You always use your traditional money first because that has to be taxed. We always are banking on that taxes will go up. I do not know of a time in history where the tax bracket has gone down.
Yeah.
Now, they've had deductions and all that, but the actual brackets have not gone down. So we're anticipating that in the future, long-term bracket tax from the progressive tax system will go up. And that's fairly normal over time. So that takes care of that because they mentioned 401k and Roth separately. They're actually the same thing, unless you have an IRA. But anyway, you leave the Roth as your very last thing because it's potentially tax-free. So leave that for your spouse's children, whatever. Now, going to the brokerage, you have to do capital gains. Though the way they handle, I'm not an expert in taxes, Amanda, but capital gains, the way Congress, everybody deals with that, with the taxes, it goes all over the board. So what we say today could be different next month with how they handle that. But either way, you have to pay capital gains on your stocks. And I'm assuming when they say brokerage, they're talking about stocks because you can also do ETFs, but it's all the same. That's a whole different game. So do you have, I kept it kind of simple there, but what do you want to say?
I might disagree with you slightly. So obviously Roth is last. That's always what you want to touch the very last. the brokerage account might be better to draw from than your 401k if you're looking to do a withdrawal before you're 59 and a half.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you're avoiding any penalties.
Absolutely.
It's also, it also may be a good idea to withdraw it now if, you know, you can afford the taxes now. And, you know, that might be and I would only do partial then. I would still do mostly the 401k withdrawals. Keep in mind, though, that capital gains taxes only apply if you've had the investment within that account for more than 1 year.
Right.
So if you're buying and selling stocks all the time within that account, each one has to be held for a year or more to get the benefit of capital gains tax versus an income tax rate on that. So if it's less than a year that you've held that one particular stock or that one particular ETF, then you're going to pay your income tax rate on it, which is going to be higher than capital gains.
And that's why day trading is such a bad idea.
Yeah, capital gains are usually around, for most people, they're around 15%. I mean, 20% for real high income earners. But 15% is generally a better tax rate than your income tax, which is going to be much higher. So in that regard, I do agree with you, Craig, that you should be paying the most tax up front. And so the 401k draw is better. But again, if your situation is that you're not quite the age for retirement, 59 and a half, then you're kind of only left with withdrawing from the brokerage account.
I totally agree with you. I think I may have stated my order incorrectly. You're totally correct. So, but that's why we don't buy and sell our stocks as day traders, because everyone forgets about that part.
Yeah.
Okay. If you happen to make money, which 70% of people lose all their money in day trading, but, and you can write that off, but any capital gains short term, Yeah. And then you have to print out your list of all your buys and sells. And I've done that before. It's almost enough paperwork to not want to do day trading. It's not fun. Yeah. It's disgusting, actually. So, all right.
Yeah. And then within your accounts, you know, if the other option is you can invest in tax advantage federal and municipal bonds. Of course, there's not much gain on those. But if you need the money short term, there's some tax advantages there.
Absolutely.
But again,
love it.
Speak to your tax professional.
Yes. We are definitely not tax pros, and everyone's situation will be completely different, especially when you're talking about inheritance as they are. That's a whole nother.
Right.
No, a whole nother deal. So, okay. So question number four, which is more tax stuff, Amanda? Mm-hmm. And this is something that we're basically going over, something we've talked about before. People get confused about the tax system we have in the United States. And they get so hung up on tax brackets because they don't understand. So the question is, when paying off your home by selling stocks, how do people handle the taxes being put in a higher tax bracket? A lot of people that I've run into, they believe that if, let's say they make...
By paying off your home by selling stocks.
I think we're back to a stock selling question. And so
that's really
all
it is. So it doesn't matter what you're using the money for.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You know, whether they use it to, actually, I prefer them doing that than take my other 401k, which there are people doing that. So at least they're using stocks.
But. Well, so this goes back to, it depends how long you've held the stock.
Right. Right.
So you're not, it's not going to impact your tax bracket at all. If you've held the stock longer than a year, then you just pay capital gains on those stocks.
Right. So I want to get into briefly the tax bracket system, disregarding how long they held the stocks. Let's say
You're saying it only applies if the stock has been held less than a year.
Right. So the tax bracket system. There's a lot of people, let's say they make, I'm looking at the tax brackets. I gave you a copy of it.
Yeah.
So let's say they're a single person. They make $210,000 a year, which throws them in a 35% tax bracket.
So they can afford a Honda Civic.
Right. That's funny. So let's say they make $210,000 a year. Okay. Taxable income. The tax bracket starts at 1,351. Where'd they come up with that number? Can't we just round this stuff off, Congress?
No, because it increases by a percentage each year or whatever.
Okay, whatever.
So the percentages start making them weird numbers.
Okay. No wonder nobody can figure out their taxes. All right, so 207,000 is where the bracket starts. You're only paying that 35% on the 3,000 that went over into that bracket.
Right.
It's a progressive tax system.
35% on 3,000 and then however, so then you pay 32% on the amount that's between
163,000 to 207,000.
So what is that? Let's see. 207, 350 minus 163, 301. So you pay 30. Oh, I didn't do that right.
So people, what we're trying to say is you don't pay 35% tax on the entire 210,000. It's a progressive tax system. Yeah. Each bracket, if you go over it, you're only paying the higher amount for the money that went over that bracket. You're not paying for the entire amount.
On the $3,000 that are over, that's 210 minus 207.
Right.
And then you pay 32% on the $44,000 that's in that bracket. And then you pay 24% on the next bracket worth money. And then so what you have to do is then take all of those percentages and then add them up.
Right.
And that's why we say that there is an effective tax rate. There's a tax bracket that you're in, but that really averages out to like an effective tax rate because you're paying 10% on the first $9,800 that you make. And then you pay 12% on the next $30,000 that you make. And then 22% on the next $45,000 that you make above and beyond that first $30,000. So it's actually an incrementally larger percentage applied to just chunks of your income.
So there are people I've run into, a fair number, Amanda, that they are afraid to make too much because they're afraid they got to pay a ton of taxes. I'm like, no, it's not bad to make more money. You're only paying, and they didn't know that. There's so many people that believe, well, if I don't want to jump in the next tax bracket, so I'm going to work less. I'm like, no, make the money. Don't stop making money.
You're still going to have more money overall than if you stay in a smaller bracket.
But how many times have you, I know you probably heard this, people are afraid to go into the next tax bracket.
Yeah.
No, that's not how it works, people. It's a progressive, that's the right term, right? Progressive tax system. Yep.
Yes.
And then you do come up with the overall effective rate, as Amanda. Yeah. That was a great way of explaining it. Thank you.
Yeah. So the fear that people have is, if I go over this tax bracket by $1, then it's going to reduce my money, right?
Right. They'll make less money.
It will never reduce it. So it just means that that $1 is going to be charged a higher percentage rate on that $1.
They think their annual income will reduce. They'll make less if they jump in the next tax bracket. There's so many people that believe that. That's not how it works.
Right.
No, that's why you have tax software and all that and tables to figure all this out. So that's a very common thing. I try to explain to them, like, no, keep making money. Get a bigger shovel.
Because if you jump from the 24% bracket to the 32%, that 32% isn't on your entire annual income. It's only on the dollar amount that you're over the top of the 24%.
And trust it from people that are in these other brackets. Trust us. We're not getting slammed. And I have no problem jumping to the 37% bracket if I can. I'm nowhere near that bracket. So, which is over $518,000, Amanda. To me, that's a goal in life.
Right.
I want to have the 50% bracket.
Well, I don't. I'd rather have my income coming from capital gains then.
Or Roth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is tax free. All right. So anyway, I thought that was a good discussion because that keeps popping up in various ways. All right. Here's one from your Savvy Savings, which you've talked about before. Here's the question. Is there an app to calculate your net worth? So I did some research, Amanda, on our great website at rockonthemoney.com. I went in the search thing. I typed in financial apps. And guess what? There was a savvy savings in episode 44, which it's not exactly the net worth thing, but the apps that I found by doing some more Googling. Some of the apps you did go over. So you talked about our picks for financial apps. So they do other things, but you talked about Personal Capital, Mint, and Every Dollar.
Yeah. And so those are all great apps. I don't use it personally, but from what I've read, Personal Capital is the best one in terms of identifying your net worth.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too.
Yeah, the other ones are much better than Personal Capital at budgeting. I don't think you need a fancy app, though, to figure out your net worth. That you can do on a nap, the back of a napkin.
I totally agree with you.
It's not that hard.
How much
what
do you
are
owe?
Your major assets worth? So think about your car and your house in terms of what's it worth.
Yep.
How much money do you have in your accounts, your retirement, your savings, your checking, all of your liquid accounts? Mm-hmm. And then do you have any other assets that are worth anything? So add up all your assets. And then in the other column, add up all your debt that you owe. Right.
Including your house, your cars, all debt,
mortgage,
even if you owe your friend $100. So, that's debt.
Yeah. Yep. Add up the total debt in the other column, and then all you do is take your assets minus your debts, and that's your net worth.
That's it. It's really easy. I'm pretty sure most of you can do that in your head. You know where you're at.
Ballpark. For sure, ballpark.
Right. You know how much your house is worth. You know how much you owe on it. You know what's in your bank accounts.
Yeah.
And you know what your credit card balances are and your car. Yeah, So
it's basic arithmetic, and it's not, there's no magical formula, nothing complicated with algebra or anything. It's just simple addition. You add up all the items in the column A, which are your assets. You add up all the, numbers that are in column B, which are your debts. And then you take A minus B equals your worth.
Yep,
addition and then subtraction. You guys can handle it. You don't need an app.
It's pretty simple. And it's probably something you may or may not like, but at least you know. So.
And you can round,
Yes.
Like you don't have
you
to have
just need a ballpark, running. Right? Absolutely.
You can do it.
Yeah, you can do it. You got it, people.
But if you need an app, I heard Personal Capital is great.
And you know how you make this part even more. How you make this easier? You be debt free.
That's right.
Because then it's like, well, what do I own? That's it. Yeah. There is no subtraction.
Mint will do the same thing. I've used Mint and it's relatively accurate, but only if you enter all of your information.
I can use a Google spreadsheet and figure this out.
You can use a Google sheet in 2 minutes.
Absolutely. So, all right. Last question, which is a question that keeps popping up as well. For some reason, we predicted this, actually, Amanda. I predicted that because times are getting tough. We mentioned like 20 episodes ago that there was an increase of advertising from financial advisors.
I am not shocked. Especially during daytime television.
That I'm getting tons of financial advisor questions, completely disregarding everything we've said for the last I don't know how many months. But here it is. How on earth, I love this. How on earth does one find a good financial advisor? It's worse than shopping for a car or trustworthy mechanic. Absolutely. I agree with you on that.
So do you have a financial advisor, Craig?
No, I do not.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't feel I need one because I keep everything super simple.
Right.
I think that I like how you brought that in because I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah.
Why do you need one?
Our first question is always, why do you think you need one? And some people do. There are valid reasons to have a financial advisor, but the majority of individuals don't need one. They just need to be a little bit more informed about what's going on. And so it takes a little bit of effort, but not much effort.
Right.
But unless your personal financial situation is extremely complex with a lot of different types of assets and all of that going on, you generally don't need a financial advisor.
And those people need
that's
a wealth management
opinion,
company. You know what I mean?
That's
a total different thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you.
But if you do insist on getting a financial advisor, right, then you want to make sure you're getting a fee-only one so mm-hmm. that they do not have any fiduciary gain on their end to steer you in the direction of things that make them money versus you money.
Right. So there's a couple of things that, we've always coached people with. Number one, if you let me talk about the two websites first, but I want to keep adding this third thing in here. Okay. So we recommend going to two places to look up for a fee only advisor: the Garrett Planning Network, GarrettPlanningNetwork.com. Just put in your zip code and you get a whole list of them, and they can go through there and find one that you like and you can interview them. That's a whole other process.
G-A-2-R's,
yep.
E, and then two T's.
Yep.
So two R's, Planning Network. Garrett.
Yep, Garrett. And then also, this is actually one I would prefer over Garrett, is the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. So it's NAPFA.org. Okay. So it's, again, you put in your zip code, the list comes up, and you can look through there, you can call them and interview them and see if they're fit your you. Now, yeah. I want to add one more website into it. It's by the federal government, and I love this website. I know that's weird. I love a federal government website. It's called investor.gov. And if you watch TV, they actually do commercials about investor.gov to check out the financial advisor that you picked or someone that's referring it to you. So if you go in there, you type in the person's name, their history comes up. You'll know how many complaints they've had, if they're even licensed. But here's the key here. If you're looking financial advisor, you'll see one or two licenses that they have. One is their financial advisor. Number two, this is what I kind of steer people away from. Personally, I would not do this. It's up to you if you want to do it. It will come up and say they're also a broker. So what will happen is they can give all the advice and all that as a financial advisor with it, and then they can quickly flip around and be a broker with you, and then they make money off of what they just told you, even though they said they're a fiduciary. And this is legal, and we've talked about this before, so they may be fine, they may be nice, everything, but I'm just using that as another filter that I want everyone to do if you really think you need a financial advisor. That's it. Yeah. I'm not saying they're bad people. It is a caution. There are lawsuits currently in the courts over this. I'm just warning people.
I find much more valuable than a financial advisor?
What's that? Our podcast?
A tax advisor and a legal advisor.
I agree, especially the tax person.
Way more beneficial than a financial planner.
Yeah, because they seem to know what will happen with your money as you earn it, where it needs to be. I, you know what? We haven't said that before. That's a great point. I like that.
And you need both, because there are implications that they work hand in hand. And, you know, one, you may have some give and take on some decisions, but you have to weigh the cost benefit of everything. So sometimes you might want to take a tax hit in order to have a long term, you know, legal advantage, and sometimes vice versa. So.
And they have no skin in the game by telling you how your taxes are going to turn out.
Right.
So, or in the lawyer doesn't either. For the yearly advice.
Tax professionals get paid fee only. You know, they're not making a percentage of your tax return.
And the legal part, because you're in that world, that's also fee only, right? It's for the time.
Yeah. And I mean, I say a legal advisor, you don't need constantly. Check in once a year, or if your situation changes, like if you have a baby or you get divorced or you buy a new house or you move to a different state and you have assets in one state versus another. You know, obviously you want your estate planning taken care of, and in any of those circumstances, life circumstances change, you want to make sure you update your estate planning. But you don't need them, you know, on speed dial. The tax person, you might want to have a closer relationship with. And I love mine. I can email him and he responds in like 5 minutes. Always.
That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah. And you know what? I pay a little bit more for my tax preparation in the spring, but then throughout the year, I don't really get charged for little questions here or there, you know?
Oh, and I got you.
most advisors are going to be like that. Now, if they have to prepare a letter for the IRS on your behalf, then you can expect to get charged for that. Well, and that's reasonable because they have to do research. They have to draft the letter. And that's fine. But little questions here or there, a good tax professional is not going to, you know, charge you nickel and dime for every question. So
I love that.
Don't be afraid to ask them. And when you ask them, if you're not sure, say, you know, let me know if this is something that you need to bill me for and what it would cost.
Perfect. Yeah, because I'm sure you're not the only one that's asked for this or that. So
yeah. A lot of times they just have a quick answer for you. And that's why I don't mind paying a little bit more for my tax prep in the spring. Is because I know that included in that, I get all this service throughout the year, anytime I have a question.
Well, I'm going to have to start looking for a really good tax person. So
you're not getting that advantage if you're using. Yeah, TurboTax doesn't give you that. H&R Block Online is not giving you that.
And you know all the things I got going on now. It's like, I don't even know how to handle it. It's happening so fast. I'm not sure what to do. So yeah, I got to pay some people and plan this out. So
yeah,
I know where I'm gonna get my lawyer though. All right, guys, that was great. That should have been our first question, because I think that was probably the best tip out of the whole list. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you very much, Amanda. You're sounding great. It's good to have you back.
Yeah, you're not sounding great. Work on that.
My voice got better and better as the podcast went through. So
all right,
thank you, Amanda.
Yep.
You can find Amanda on Instagram and Twitter at @AgileAmanda. And you can find me on all of your favorite social media platforms at RocklandUSA. Don't forget to check out the website and subscribe to the podcast. All the links are right there on the front page, rockonthemoney.com. Please subscribe and leave comments to our podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or even your favorite app that you got right there on your phone. Those help us out a lot. If you're ever looking for a specific topic or content that we've produced over time, just go to the website and in the search bar, just type in your topic, be it 401k, stimulus check, or anything, and everything comes right up for you. We have so much gratitude that you've taken the time out of your day to listen to our podcast while you're walking, driving, traveling, or whatever you're doing. Please send us an email. Let us know how you're doing out there. podcast@rocklandusa.com. So long, everybody. Thank you very much again. We'll see you again next time. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.